I think it's important to also recognize that trying to protect a child is not about the child. It's about ourselves. And to be open to each other in a family system. Everyone is going to grieve very differently. And to be honest with each other and recognize that that will be the case. And to allow each other to go to their own corners if they need be, and then come back together and be together. And then, of course, in the church, we come together.
Supporting one another during times of grief. It's so important. Today on Come Receive the Light, we're going to get some insight into how to provide that support, when to offer the support, how the comfort differs depending upon the age of the person grieving, and if you're the person struggling, where do you turn for help? These are just some of the directions we'll go during the next half hour as we wrap up our month of conversations dealing with end-of-life issues here on this broadcast and throughout the ministry. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos, who will be along in just a minute with our first guest. Welcome to our program as we look at life in all its complexity through the lens of the Orthodox Christian faith. We have covered a lot of fascinating topics over the last several weeks, and you can get caught up or listen again by going to our website at myocn.net. We've also been dealing with these issues on our blog called The Sounding, and you can catch up on that as well when you go to the website. Again, it's myocn.net. I'm also going to talk a bit about our 20th anniversary later. That's right, we've been around 20 years. And it is definitely a cause for celebration. We'll hear as well from an author of a brand new book for children at the end of the broadcast. It's a great book and a wonderful conversation, so stay tuned. And starting us off with our first guest, here's Father Chris.
We welcome to the program today Maria Skaros Mercado. She is a board-certified clinical chaplain, and she's a grief counselor. We're going to speak about death today and how do we deal with death as families. Maria, nice to have you on the program today.
Nice to be here. Thank you, Father.
Let me ask you, I guess, an obvious question. How do you prepare a child for the death, not only of his own death, but how about a family member, even a friend?
Well, why don't we start with the death of a family member for a child, because I think that's more common for people. Sooner or later, the child will be confronted with the subject of death. Mm-hmm. And often trying to protect them from sorrow causes unnecessary anxiety and perhaps guilt in children. And it's important to prepare children before an actual death, if that's possible. Mm-hmm. And the family or the parent is too upset to help the child after the death. When someone in a family dies, many parents will attempt to protect their children by not talking about sorrow or death. And this is a misguided kind of protection. Children don't need protection. They need competent guidance and satisfactory answers to their questions. And children can be taught that all things die, flowers, pets, people, and all that is a part of life. And also to reassure or to let them know that death makes people sad and that it's a part of life. But together a family remembers happy times and tells stories and goes to church and prays and shares their feelings about the person who's died. And some days we'll be happy and others sad. And we'll all be here to comfort each other. Now, as far as preparing a child for their own death, I started off in grief counseling, actually, in pediatric oncology. And I have to tell you that the children were the ones that comforted the parents.
That's what I've seen, too. It's an amazing thing.
It is very amazing.
Yeah.
They truly come to terms with their vulnerability and their fragility and somehow gain this empowerment, and they begin to care for their loved ones. Mm. And I think that that's something that's quite miraculous in a way, especially young children, under 10, I'd say, mm-hmm. in particular.
Let me ask you this, Maria. How about the parents who there is a death in the family? Mm-hmm. And the parents say, you know, you're not going to come to the funeral parlor, and you're not going to come, we do not want you to come to the funeral itself. Mm-hmm. How do you, any guidelines there for parents? How do
yeah.
you deal with that?
I really think that it should be the child's decision. And I think the parents should be honest and let the child know what they can expect, what they'll see, tell them exactly what takes place, and let them decide, because it is a family process. And by telling the child that they cannot be a part of this basically gives them the message that this is something that is an unacceptable experience for them to encounter.
That's the
message. It's not a natural experience.
That's the message, yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
A difference in talking to children that deal with death, the death of others, 5 years old, 10 years old, 15 years old. I'm sure there's differences there. Could you kind of put some of that in a box for us?
Oh, sure. Well, death is an emotionally different experience depending on the age of the child. Children under the age of four usually view death as temporary and reversible, as I mentioned to you, and it's reinforced in cartoons when a character dead 1 minute and bounces back to life the next.
I never thought of that. You're absolutely right. Yeah, that's right. That's what happens.
You know, they may feel angry. When they see people grieving, they may feel angry due to the lack of attention that they're getting. And they may feel guilty that they might have caused the death because they were mean to Papu or Yaya the last time they spoke. And even though they don't verbalize these feelings, children at this age need to be reassured that their parents are healthy and will always be there for them, and that the child was not responsible for the death. Now, above the age of six, children begin to understand the concept and the reality of death. And it's important for you to give brief, clear, and honest answers to the older child about death and wait for them to ask questions. Because sometimes we get a little too esoteric and they just really want simple answers. And children can absorb just so much information at one time. So it's important to give them the opportunity to ask questions days, weeks, and even months later. And with young children, parents need to avoid phrases like, Papu went on a long trip, or the family pet was put to sleep, because then don't be surprised when the child waits for Papu to come back.
That's right.
From his trip.
That's
and
right.
And for children to be fearful of going to bed if the pet was put to sleep. And by stating God loved Yaya so much that he took her will make the child believe that God goes around grabbing people and taking them away.
So what should they say?
They should say that this Yaya was sick and everybody dies. And to use the word die, because using euphemisms like passed away, that can get confusing to a very young child. And children with unsettled feelings of grief, they often, if they're sending messages to you that they're unsettled, like they're failing grades or they're bedwetting and withdrawing from activities, it's important to sit and talk to them about their feelings and, if need be, to seek professional advice.
Okay.
Teens are a whole nother ball game. They feel an overwhelming loss, especially if the person who's died has helped shape their self-identities. Because during their adolescent years, they're trying to figure out who they are, and they're going through all this ego strengthening. And it's important to be open, honest, and loving to them.
Mm-hmm.
Sad to say, many adults tell teens to be strong in the face of death, which discourages them to share their grief. So it's important to help the teen find safe and nurturing emotional outlets and letting them know that it's okay and normal to feel a multitude of emotions when someone they love dies. Basically, overall, children don't choose to grieve or not to grieve. They grieve according to their developmental stage, and it's a caring adult in all their stages that will make a difference for them.
You use the terms Papu and Yaya, and for those people who are not Greek that might be listening to the program, Papu is a grandfather, Yaya is a grandmother.
Right.
And my grandfather, my Papu, had a great saying. He says, he gave you 2 ears and 1 mouth. So in life, you listen more and you speak less.
Right.
And he had a third grade education, so he knew what he was talking about.
Oh, my Yaya also had quite, it's very funny that we're talking about this because my parents, my yaya came, and I was her namesake.
Mm-hmm.
And she came from Greece, and I was very excited to meet her, and she was just wonderful. And unfortunately, she had a stroke, a massive stroke in our home at the dinner table. Mm. And I was 5 years old. And I was scooted in the back room with my cousin,
mm-hmm.
and the EMS came and took her away, and I never saw my grandmother again and was told that she went back to Greece.
Oh, my goodness.
As opposed to telling me honestly,
right.
you know, what was going on, and maybe that's why I do grief counseling. Oh,
who knows? But obviously you do a great job at it. Let me ask you this. What do we do when the entire family is grieving? I mean,
yeah.
mother, father, children. How do we deal with that? Any ideas there for us?
Well, ideally, if the death is imminent, it's important to speak about it prior to the actual death and what to expect and to prepare children and to prepare each other. And this helps the adults cope later on and with related issues that'll arise. But when mourning, let the children know it, and the parents should let the child see that they are truly sad.
Mm-hmm.
If grief is hidden, the child will come to understand that grief is unacceptable. It's an unacceptable feeling. So it's important to be open to the child's questions, no matter how old they are.
Mm-hmm.
And a child will watch the adults to see whether they're permitted to ask questions or to be sad, to cry, or to go out to play. I think it's important to also recognize that forcing a child to speak or trying to protect a child is not about the child. It's about ourselves. And to be open to each other in a family system. Everyone is going to grieve very differently, and to be honest with each other and recognize that that will be the case, and to allow each other to go to their own corners if they need be, and then come back together and be together. And then, of course, in the church, we come together.
Let's talk about that for a minute. Coming mm-hmm. together in the church, there are memorial services. We have them usually in increments of time, 9 days, 40 mm-hmm. days, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, and then during the Saturdays of Souls, which are three times a year, actually
right.
four times a year. There's three and there's one near Pentecost. So how do the monthly increments, do they correspond at all to the natural grieving process?
On some level, yes, they do. I think it helps carry us through the grieving process. And remembrance is an important part of grieving, though at times very painful. Now, having these traditions in place is a way of feeling God's presence and love with us. And it's a way of traveling the path of tomorrow into a new relationship with the deceased, with the love and support of our Lord and our church.
Mm.
And our loved ones are also a part of these traditions, and thus, this gives the family, the friends, and the community a way in which to honor the deceased and witness God's love. So it is an important means of coming every few months, you know, just touching base.
Yes.
Touching base at home, you know, with all of us, with each other.
And it's also good in the community. I try to tell people, they could mm-hmm. tell me all the time, you know, Father, I really don't do the church. I can go on the beach because we're in Florida. I can go to the beach. I can go mm-hmm. pray there. I can go to the tennis court. I can go to the coffee shop. And I really don't need to come to church. And I said, well, you're totally and completely wrong.
Right.
Not only do you need the church, but other people need to have you with them.
Right.
Because you're a witness to them and you're a strength to them. Because we live in a community. We don't live as isolated entities.
Yes.
And we also do, as you know, the memorial services. You have koliva. You have the memorial wheat that is prepared.
Mm-hmm.
That has, I think, a therapeutic effect as well, besides from its theological standpoint, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. I absolutely agree. And the actual preparation must be very healing. And I have to be honest in saying that I'm guilty of never having prepared it. And as a young woman, my mother and my aunts didn't want the younger girls to be a part of the preparation.
I remember those days, yes.
You know, once again, a misguided means of protecting us. But this is an important part of our tradition in helping the healing and understanding of what Christ said to us. Unless a wheat grain falls into the earth and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. I would imagine the preparation is a type of prayerful process. And Father, I'm going to tell you right on this program that the next Lenten period, I will prepare it myself to honor my family.
That's beautiful. No, that's beautiful. I think it's a wonderful practice. I really do.
Yes.
Aside from the memorial services, activities, letters, what can you recommend to people that are dealing with the grieving process?
Well, you know, one thing that I've noticed is at wakes, many people have photos all around.
Yes.
Representing the life of the deceased. And some even have laptops showing family movies and rotating photographs.
Yes, I've seen that too.
And collecting photos can be painful as well as joyous. Now, I remember months after my father's death, I went to a craft shop and bought an elaborate scrapbook and stickers and various trinkets, and took another few months to complete the book. Now, my father died years before my children were born, but I have the scrapbook to show, which they love to look through. And with each page, they repeat a story I shared.
Amazing.
And because of this act of memoriam for my father, I have not only healed from my grief, but I'm able to share my father's love with his granddaughters. So that's very healing, to do a scrapbook, or to write a story, or to keep a journal, to write letters, continuing to celebrate birthdays and anniversaries in some way or another is also something that people can do, or donating money or time in the deceased's name can be another way to offer memorial.
Maria, it's been a fascinating conversation, and I hope and pray you'll come back again. God give you strength in everything you do, especially in the care of those who are leaving this world. And as you've said, speak to it about dying. And that's what we did today. Thank you so much, Maria.
Thank you, Father Chris.
What an important conversation. You're listening to Come Receive the Light, part of the Orthodox Christian Network of Ministries, on the web at myocn.net. That's myocn.net. And we've been around for 20 years now as a media outreach for the Orthodox Christian Church. And to help us celebrate, we're asking that you consider a gift of $36.50. Now, why $36.50? Well, that's just 10 cents per day, but it makes a world of difference to us and those that we reach out and help. Find out more on the website, myocn.net. We would be honored to have you join our team in that way. Well, Tiffany Papa George is a professional actress, an author, and a storyteller. She has been honing her craft for more than 25 years. She and her family live in the San Francisco Bay Area, and she has another new book out. It just launched in October, and it's called My Yellow Balloon. She works with families and professionals who want to help children open up and heal through the power of story and navigate through the difficult processes of loss and grieving. There's always something more to say on this subject. So here again is Father Chris.
Tiffany, this sounds like a tremendous book. Talk to us about it.
Well, it's a project that I've worked on for 31 years. So it has grown with me.
And it started with a homework assignment, right?
Yeah, it started with a homework assignment in my ninth grade English class. And for me, ninth grade was in junior high school. And I had this very courageous teacher named Ms. Cannon, who was kind of prickly, I thought, at the time, but really who is a lovely person. And she assigned a death and dying unit to our class. And I really commend her for that, because it's something that usually isn't even spoken of, let alone in class. And so for the children or the kids that hadn't experienced much loss, it was an introduction. And for those of us who had experienced a lot of loss, it was a really great outlet to express it and talk about it. So we had to pick from a list of about 15 assignments, and they all kind of hit me with a thud, each one, like interview a dying person or go to a cemetery and do those epitaph, you know, kind of chalk drawings. But the last one of the 15, I do remember it was the one I chose, which was write a children's book explaining death to them. And I said, I can do that one. And that's the one I chose to do.
That's the original storyline then, right?
Well, the original storyline came as I was playing with my 1.5-year-old brother at the time. And it played in my head like a very vibrant daydream. I call it like a mind movie. And it was a metaphor. And the original storyline is pretty much in the book, and it takes it up to where Joey loses the balloon. But the ending was different because I took it very literally at 14 years old, and then after he loses the balloon, it became like an instruction manual. Hmm. When you die, you are like a balloon, and you rise into the sky, and you go to a place called heaven. Even so, my teacher loved the story so much, she worked for 2 years to publish it.
By the age of 14, you must have experienced a lot of loss to be able to write such a profound book. What was going on in your life at that time?
Well, I was a part of a big, fat Greek family, which is wonderful. The great part about that is you have so many people to love and be loved by, but it is a two-sided coin, and the sad part of that is both timely and untimely losses occur when you're part of a big family. And so I had been through several deaths at that time, as well as my parents' divorce when I was 10. And by the time I was 14, I had even, at 12 years old, lost my Uncle Galen, who was playing basketball at our church, and had a massive heart attack at 38 years old and left behind my two cousins and his wife. Mm. And the thing about Greeks is we know how to grieve, you know, which is great because a lot of people don't. But as a child, you know, as these things were hitting our family, it was really scary as a child to watch the adults grieve in that way because, you know, you didn't ever really know, like, how it was going to ever resolve. And it always did, but I wish I would have had this book at that time in my own life.
Sure. The final end, can you talk us about the ending of the book? What inspired it?
Years later, I carried this little book. My teacher, one thing that she put inside of me is that it was special. She worked very hard to publish it, didn't get anywhere, but I knew it was special. So I carried it with me wherever I went. If I went away to school, I carried it. When my husband and I moved to London and I worked there in the theater and I had two suitcases to take with me for 2 years, I carried it. And I kept thinking I was going to work on it, but the ending always bothered me. So years later, it was about 7 years ago now, I had my then 5-year-old son, Dimitri, and my then 2-year-old son, Timothy. We went to the park and we were playing, and I realized I didn't have an extra diaper and I had to leave pretty abruptly. And they were crying in the back seat of my car, and I was trying to get them home and soothe them. So the book was the last thing on my mind. And as I was driving home, I had that same kind of experience where the whole ending came to me and I saw the whole thing and I knew it was profound. I felt chills all over my body, Father Chris. It was amazing. And I knew I had to pull the car over and I didn't have an extra diaper and I certainly didn't have a pad of paper. And I pulled out my deposit slip and I wrote the entire ending that I had just received on the deposit slip while I'm trying to say, it's okay, we're going to be home in a minute, just a minute. And I was writing the ending to the story. That's how it came. And I realized at that point that it was not a book that explained death to children. It was really a story that takes us through the process of love and loss. And you really have to love something deeply to feel anything when you lose it, but that grief experience takes us into a place, if we allow it or allow our children to feel, and we don't soothe those feelings, we really feel them, we end up coming to a point of transformation, deep transformation. Love transforms us, and it leads us to a point of transcendence, and that's what this book is about.
Well, I think we should do something with OCN with this, and I would hope, really. This book sounds fantastic. I would think it would be a great read for students in Sunday school programs throughout the United States. It's something that is not too heavy. It's something that will touch their hearts. And then, of course, we can come in with maybe some study questions to help them out, too. Tiffany, it's been a joy to have you on the program. We wish you every success with what you've done. With that yellow balloon, I mean, it's an amazing story. And we encourage everyone to get the book and, of course, look out for the play coming in the near future. Thanks, Tiffany.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Father Chris.
That's Tiffany Papageorge, and her book, again, is entitled My Yellow Balloon. And, of course, it's available through the OCN web store. It's right there on our website at myocn.net. And any purchase you make when you go through our web store to Amazon generates a donation back to the ministry. That's myocn.net. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Mike Trout. Our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos. Special thanks, as always, to Ann Dankert, our executive producer. And I hope you'll be back next week. We'll be here with another edition of Come Receive the Light, and we'd love to have you join us. And remember to always have faith in what you listen to.